One moment you're walking down the sidewalk in the sunshine and everything is just bright and golden and beautiful. You feel like you can do no wrong and everything is coming up Milhouse. Mm-hmm. And then 10 seconds later, you're in the pits of hell trying to dig yourself out of a hole and you're wondering why you ever did this in the first place and fighting those demons. And I think now that we're about 8 years in, the frequency of those pendulum swings have at least kind of space themselves out a bit. It's not, you know, day to day as much as it might be every, you know, few months we're solving some sort of major issue.
Welcome to the Small Business Storyteller Show, the podcast designed to learn from the successes and the failures of small businesses making an impact. My name is Seth Silvers, and after 4 years of helping small businesses learn to market with stories, I've learned that someone might be selling something similar to you, but nobody, absolutely no one, can compete with your stories. This show is dedicated to diving into the one thing that makes every small business unique, their story, and learning from the good and the hard parts. If you see business as a tool for good and you want to learn from others who believe the same, you're in the right place. Welcome to the Small Business Storyteller Show.
Welcome back to the Small Business Storytellers. Today we're here with Ryan Stover from Community Funded. Thank you so much for being with us.
My pleasure.
And this is going to be a fun conversation because I think everybody knows what like crowdfunding is, but we don't really get the opportunity to sit down with companies that are actually like on the forefront of it. And you guys really have been the whole time. And so Ryan, to start, just give us some context of who you are. Tell us a little bit about Community Funded, and then we'll kind of jump backwards into that story a little bit more.
For sure. So I've spent my entire life as a creative, communicating ideas through pictures and video and designs and things like that. And that was my whole background coming into Community Funded. And when the idea came up, it was really an opportunity to put my knowledge into the service of other people with stories to tell. So That's cool. My whole kind of creative upbringing bringing me to a point where it became really obvious that my purpose was to turn around and help others benefit from that same ability to tell a story.
So what kind of like you mentioned creative work, graphic design, photography, like what kind of creative work were you doing?
Yeah, I mean, I think of myself as a creative Swiss Army knife in that since I was old enough to pick up a crayon, I've been creating one thing or another, and I was on the forefront of a lot of the kind of digital video when that was coming out and new. Cool. And I spent my pretty much from, you know, 15 through 25 years old doing freelance creative work, a lot of video projects, web design, application design, print design, anything you can think of.
That's awesome. And then was it 2008 when you guys
launched? Community Funded?
Yeah.
The idea, the seeds were really planted 2011.
Okay, 2011. So then for those people that don't know what Community Funded is, you're a co-founder. Share with us what it is and really talk to us about those seeds and really how that started.
Yeah, we've evolved a lot. So it might be easiest to talk about those seeds and then we're at today. The root of the idea was a very grassroots concept of giving anyone a platform that allowed them to tell a story and connect that with action. Hmm. So that's the basic idea of crowdfunding, is that you now have a platform that you can put up a video and share it with all your friends and family and combine that with some sort of an action, whether that's buying a pre-release product or funding something. And so the original concept, which was when Kickstarter was leaving New York and Indiegogo was just starting up, those were very specifically focused on creative artists. And we saw how a platform like that could be applied to community projects and inventors and people trying to build parks. And we had a very wide concept of who could use a platform like this. Mm-hmm. And those were the seeds, and that's a lot of what our roots are, and we know a lot about individual stories. The evolution is that we eventually collided with the fundraising ecosystem where there's a lot of big organizations that have done this for years.
Right.
And we made a choice in about 2013, rather than having the platform, we were going to sell the platform. So today, we provide the same capability for a community to tell its stories, but we don't try to be that big community. We're kind of installing these platforms in communities all over the world.
So it's almost like a SaaS
exactly
crowdfunding platform, which I guess would explain why people know the name of Kickstarter, but not community funded. But you'd probably go to guess that a lot of people have used your platform without
knowing. That's a very good guess, yeah. And if you live in Fort Collins, there's quite a few organizations that do their fundraising.
How early were you guys in the crowdfunding movement?
We were early enough that I think had we made a few different decisions along the way, we might have been GoFundMe. Hmm. We might have been more of a household brand name because we were contemporaries with them. We were watching them evolve as we were evolving.
Right.
And I'm not regretful for where we ended up, but yeah, we were very much, I think we were the 7th crowdfunding platform on the internet. Hmm. And today there's thousands for any niche you can think of.
That's crazy. That's amazing. So what did community funded look like on launch day?
Yeah.
And how is that different from what it is today?
So the thing that is probably a really fun part of the story is that when we just had this idea, we were a group of, I would say, 4 kind of founding members that all had day jobs. We were all doing other things. And we just saw this idea and were so excited by it that the beginning of community funded was, you know, 16-hour days on Saturdays when we could all get together and just figuring out how to connect the dots without any real resources or time. Right. And so the actual launch day, we had promoted this business launching like months in advance. We actually had over 2,000 members signed up before we ever launched the platform. And we weren't ready on the day that we thought we would be. So we were working round the clock. I remember 3 days straight that we worked at our developers' house, and we would work from, you know, we'd wake up at 7:30 in the morning, we'd work all day programming, doing stuff, and we would be up until 4 in the morning and we'd go to sleep. I stayed at his house a couple of those nights. We'd wake up in the morning and do it again. So at the time, it felt like we were, you know, the guys starting Facebook, or we were, it felt very much this like entrepreneurial startup kind of Cinderella story. And honestly, we thought we were going to turn the thing on and it was all just going to work and it was going to be great. And that was not the case.
So we all do.
Yeah.
I love the optimism. Like, actually, it's not even the over-optimism of entrepreneurship. And I actually feel like it's like necessary because I think so often if we knew the challenges, if we knew how hard it was going to be, we probably would not go into it. But we have this thinking of like, when we launch it, it's going to work. And that pushes us into it. And then you get far enough into it that you're like, well, we've seen it's been harder, but it's also been better. So we might as well keep going with this.
Yeah. And I think it's very interesting, too. There's an attraction to entrepreneurism, and people, you know, go to Startup Week and they listen to speakers and they train a lot to go into that world. And at least my experience has been just kind of tumbling into it. And it does become all-encompassing. Like, your whole life is now tied up with this creative thing that you've started, and it's so delicate and balanced on the head of a pin that if you're not completely obsessed with it, there are so many ways that the thing can fall over.
Yeah. can you remember the, like, was there a moment, and I guess this also goes with multiple co-founders, like, were you a co-founder that came behind the idea of someone else, or were you there that moment when like the idea struck somebody in the head?
Nope. I give credit to McCabe and Blue, the other two co-founders, kind of jointly. I was brought in very shortly after the initial idea, but McCabe called me up. He was running his coffee shops and doing his thing, and I was at home doing my creative business.
Which, for local listeners that don't know McCabe, which is probably not many, because he knows most people. McCabe owns Mugs Coffee Shop, which is like a staple here in Fort Collins.
Yeah, so he called me up and said, "What are you doing right now?" I'm like, "I'm just working." He's like, "I'm picking you up. We're going to Sam's Club." Okay. So he had to do his shopping for Mugs, but he had this idea that was just like burning in his mind. And he and I went, and I'll never forget. I was pushing a flatbed trolley of cakes that we were buying for Mugs. And he's telling me this idea of a platform where you have a map and you can see the pins of all these little project starters, and you can map your network of, you know, things that you're interested in. And I had this vision while I pushed that cart into a huge display stand of something else, and like everything went tumbling down. And from that meeting, I was pretty much fully in. We saw the vision really clearly together, and then yeah, the rest is history.
Did you feel like you guys knew, like you had this vision? Did you guys feel like, oh, we know, like we kind of generally know how to build this? Or was it like, we're going to figure it out, we don't know?
We had a lot of just faith that this was something the world wanted, and that we were either well enough connected people or we had the right skills to make it work. And as most business people know, you really have to find a need. You have to find a pain that exists in the world. And so the other part of the story is that McCabe had just had an event right around the recession, like 2008, 9, and 10, where he was opening up his second coffee shop. And so I think the original seeds for this community-funded idea came when McCabe was trying to expand his coffee shop, and he was getting told no from all the banks and all the normal lenders. And there was an event where a lot of people that came into Mugs every day heard about how hard it was for him to get funding and started volunteering time and money and resources to open up that second shop. So that had just happened. It was a real thing. And we just saw how if you could put those stories online, all of a sudden you have a much bigger audience to connect to. And yeah, we saw that idea clearly. And in the beginning, I remember I was building the site and actually doing the programming, and I was trying to kind of modify e-commerce tools that were out there. So it was like a shopping cart experience. Mm-hmm. And we got up until the point that we really needed to crack like PayPal and delayed transactions. And that's when we brought in Matt Price, who is the fourth founding member. And he has single-handedly built the platform that is now empowering some of the largest fundraisers on the planet. Hmm. And we built it all, you know, nights and weekends in the back room of McCabe's house. So
that's amazing. So you mentioned some of the largest fundraisers on the planet. What are some stories that have really made this whole thing worth it for you guys?
Yeah, and in my mind, it's all about the stories. Like, that's what keeps all of the pain and the hardship of making a business last mm-hmm. worthwhile. So in the old days, it was watching a friend start a new business. It was helping a friend with medical bills. It was all of these stories. I walked down the street in Fort Collins, and there are dozens of businesses that got their original start on the original community-funded platform. And so just that experience of this thing is happening in the world because we figured this out. Nowadays, we have a lot more stories of big communities coming together and scaring up all their storytellers, you know, finding them in the community and then giving them a platform. And usually it's like a day where we're going to tell all the stories that are going on in this community, and we're going to fund them. Mm-hmm. And we have a lot of college and universities that, for example, on a given day, they will promote 150 or 175 individual fundraiser stories. Right. And a lot of them have been raising more money in a single day than they ever have in their organization's history.
That's cool.
And we're talking about, like, you know, large California schools and
right.
some big That's organizations.
Cool. I'm very, very excited that our first podcast we're recording in our new studio, when there's a train on the other side of the wall.
Yeah.
I can hear a train coming. So you know that a podcast is recorded in Fort
and
Collins.
It's authentically if there's trains. Fort Collins.
There
yeah.
we go. Are there like some, could you like tell us some specific examples of like how, like, I love that you're talking about, like, you know, all the stories in a community or in an organization and stuff, but like get specific with some of the examples of what impact has, I guess, been possible through your platform.
Yeah. I mean, we talked, or you mentioned at the beginning that a lot of people know what crowdfunding is. And I feel like we as a civilization have just scratched the surface of what's possible there. If you think about it, taxes are a form of crowdfunding. That's the way governments have always sort of, you know, sucked up all of the resources of a large community and then put them towards different activities. And in our democratic society, we vote for different things that we want to have happen, and then they appropriate the money. And with this concept of crowdfunding, it really puts the control in the individual, in their hands, to look at the world and say, you know what, I want to change this aspect of it. And if someone's there with a story being told and I can actually give that money and see that impact, that I think is something that is only going to evolve moving forward. And I think it's a way that as a community, we're going to overcome problems that governments can't overcome because they're not quick enough. They're not responsive enough. So I say that because although I could probably tell a lot of these little, you know, spot stories, the thing that is so intriguing to me still at this point is that if you give a community a platform to share what's important to them and then give those generous people a very frictionless, nice experience of supporting things, all of a sudden you do have businesses starting up and new things that couldn't happen previously.
So really, I mean, it sounds like community funded has been part of the dream been to like give this platform that does, I guess it makes it easier to support things that we care about so that our communities can grow.
Yeah. That was always the vision, is money and, you know, if you have a rich uncle or not, should not be the deciding factor of whether a good idea happens.
Mm-hmm.
That we should be able to come together and say, this is something we want to support and then make it happen. That's the big vision. That's the biggest vision. And I think that stemming from that are a lot of smaller one-off projects and, you know, kind of personal needs that can be met. But I think that I heard recently that Elon Musk was looking at crowdfunding portions of the Hyperloop design.
Interesting.
And, you know, you give a population that has a bunch of traffic issues the opportunity to fund a really cool technology that the government is not going to touch, you might actually.
Yeah. It makes you wonder, like, what ideas stayed dormant just because of lack of technology or because they were a couple generations earlier. Like, you just wonder what ideas, you know, were in people's heads 100 years ago that just wasn't possible because there wasn't a mechanism like community funded to share or even the technology to be able to get that idea out there. It kind of makes you, what you guys are doing, I think it definitely makes you appreciate like how possible it is to get behind things now.
Our whole motto when we started, like our tagline was anything's possible. And I still believe that. This might be a fun place to pivot into some of the challenges along the way, because
it's
not been
that
smooth sailing. It's been a lot of challenge and a lot of overcoming.
Yeah, what have been, I guess, like, are there some that stand out among the many?
Well, yeah, I mean, the thing that I find every day is that maybe it is unique to us, but I think it's more inherent to running your own business, is that it's this pendulum swinging where one moment you're walking down the sidewalk in the sunshine and everything is just bright and golden and beautiful. You feel like you can do no wrong and everything is coming up Milhouse.
Mm-hmm.
And then 10 seconds later, you're in the pits of hell trying to dig yourself out of a hole and you're wondering why you ever did this in the first place and fighting those demons. And I think now that we're about 8 years in, the frequency of those pendulum swings have at least kind of spaced themselves out a bit. It's not, you know, day to day as much as it might be every, mm-hmm. you know, few months we're solving some sort of major issue. But I mean, pretty much from minute one, we were dealing with all of the things that you get when you have a bunch of passionate people working together. I think in the beginning, it was a lot of interpersonal differences and figuring out how that old story of blind people, or, you know, touching different parts of an elephant blindfolded, everyone sees a different angle of this thing. Mm. And they're very adamant about that being the right one. And it can be very hard to come to that center point that we can all act out of. So in the beginning, you know, we weren't getting paid. We just kind of volunteered our time to make this thing happen. And then we got our first investment. And that, of course, was a huge celebratory moment, but it also opened up a whole new set of challenges. You go from being unpaid, and I mean, the only person that we were paying in the beginning was our developer, Matt, because he was working other jobs, and for him to devote time, I think we're paying him like, you know, $1,000 a month or something, just very nominal. And all of a sudden we had this investment, and I mean, looking back, it was completely crazy and reckless. Again, we thought we were, you know, the Facebook people starting up this thing that was just going to explode. I think we hired every developer in Fort Collins in an afternoon. And before we knew it, we had this huge payroll and we had to step into being a real business. And we had to just do all of this additional work. And we ran out of money and we had to fire everybody. Okay. And we basically had to hit rock bottom, and we had to, you know, find a place to figure out who we were and what we wanted to do, and then move forward from there. And that was like back in 2013, 2014, that we kind of had this big shoot for the moon and just totally missed it and cratered. And all that were left was this core team that really believed, and we knew that we weren't going to pay ourselves until we signed a contract, and we kind of had a whole reformation of the vision and the idea.
And was there, like, dive into, was there a meeting that you guys realized, like, how, I guess, over your head you were, or what do you remember about, like, that
experience? Season? Well, I think we were super naive, and we had a really awesome angel investor that we thought they were just going to keep giving us money, and we never really realized what the real fuse that was burning to figure out how to be profitable. We were just doing this good thing, and this was when we were still just running a platform. So we thought just by virtue of the cool stuff we were doing that there would always be money available. And then when it turned out that there wasn't, things got real. And I mean, it's funny, my son is the same age as our business. He's about to turn 8, just like the business is. Huh. And when I think back to the stage of the company, it kind of mirrors the stage he was in, because back then he was in diapers, he couldn't stand up, and when he did, he would take some pretty hard spills. And that's kind of the phase that we were at. A business very much matures. Hmm. And if anything, we've just cleared our teenage years, and we're moving out of the house, and we're, you know, setting up on our own and making it all work. Right. So this is like looking at baby photos, talking about that
right
moment that we had to fire everybody in an afternoon.
Man. So were there some other moments, I guess, you know, coming out of this moment of where I don't necessarily want to say immaturity, but where you don't know what you don't know. Were there kind of some moments where you realized, like, there were some actual, you shoot for the moon and you hit the moon? Like,
yeah,
it's really,
I think,
some big steps.
One of the lessons that we learned early on is that even though we had this really big idea that we saw as being able to serve everyone, it wasn't until we picked a market and we found our niche and we started speaking to that market and really just kind of focusing that we started to grow. And it was really painful to do, and it's still kind of a painful memory for me that we went from this just completely grassroots, fight the system kind of mentality to all of a sudden serving large fundraising organizations. Like, that was a major...
Which, for the audience, would be like healthcare, universities?
Right now we're mostly
or...
in higher education.
Okay.
So, you know, Penn State, Colorado State, University of California, Santa Cruz...
Cool.
But that's a completely different environment than a grassroots crowdfunding platform.
Right.
But the way that we always approached it is we had to find a place that the ideas were sticking and resonating with people who could pay, so that we could fund the operation and continue to evolve the technology. And we're only now, 8 years later, getting to the point where a lot of the original ideas that we had to put on the shelf so that we could focus are starting to come back out, and we're starting to have a little bit more latitude. But... it's a hard thing to tell someone who's really passionate about an idea, and I don't know that knowing it up front would even change it, but there comes a point, I think, when a business goes from being a purely passionate idea to suddenly figuring out that thing that you can do well and do repeatedly and getting kind of businessy about it and marketing it and selling it. And you really, the quicker you can get to that model, the actual business model, the quicker you move on to a different set of problems.
Right. How, describe the tension of, like, when, I mean, you guys have taken in investment periodically, but then also you've made money, like, you're not just spending money. And I always think that's an interesting tension, because I think it's kind of like the Shark Tank effect. I think we've, so many people have seen Shark Tank, and we have these great ideas. And so it's like, man, I have this awesome idea. I'm going to go and find somebody and surely they'll give me money. And we don't often think about how are we going to, like, be making money. And I personally feel like the entrepreneurial community is usually better at teaching people how to spend money than make money. So what's that tension been like for you guys as you, the reality is you're a software platform, so you do need to raise some money to scale, but you've also been intentional about making sure you're earning money along the way.
Yeah, so The interesting part of this is that at the same time we've been running this business, the business is really focused on helping other people get ideas started. So there's a lot of lessons that we've learned firsthand and a lot more that we've learned secondarily by watching other, you know, entrepreneurs or creatives start things. And the best way I can answer your question is I believe very strongly at this point that it is amazing when you can come up with that big vision of what you want to do. But to start small and move quickly and find something that you can do repeatedly and someone will pay you for is kind of the heart of growing. So we've raised money a number of times, and I think each time it was to take another swing at what is that kind of unit of value that we can provide, that someone's going to pay us for, and that we can demonstrate to a similar buyer type that they're going to be interested in that and want to pay us. That, I think, is the big challenge initially. And the tension, I think, is that as a creative person or as a, you know, an entrepreneur, you want to be bigger, you want to go faster than you're really ready to go, and it tends to really spread out all of the things that you want to provide to the world.
Right.
And so, truthfully, we went in front of a round after round of investors, and we always tried to be true to our essence, which is, you know, we are community funded and we've been invested in by members of our community. So we have a couple, you know, kind of larger institutional angel investors, but most of the people who have given money to community funded are, you know, friends and family and other business people in Fort Collins. And so every time you get in front of one of those people, you have to do the double edge dance of showing a vision that is exciting and enticing, and that growth vision that actually gets the investor their money back, while at the same time being just surgical in your, again, it's sort of like that metric of what can you sell, where's the value, who's buying it, how many of them are out there. And that's a really easy thing to overlook when you don't know that going in.
Right.
You know, we had a platform, we're going to charge 5%. Oh, we'll just have an endless stream of projects and that will fund us.
And yeah, I was curious if your original revenue model versus now has changed.
Oh, yeah. So when we were just a platform, it was like a 5% transaction fee, which, you know, you can really quickly do the math on how many projects, like the volume of projects you'd need to even, you know, raise operating expenses if you're spending. I mean, today we're over 200,000 a month. And so with transaction fees, we'd have to be a Kickstarter size platform, I think.
Right.
Or pretty close to. Yeah.
How did, so you mentioned like you're kind of finding your niche. I've seen in my own journey, like a fear to dive into a niche, because you kind of, the fear of, I guess, like niching yourself out of a market.
Yeah.
Even though we hear all of these, pretty much the people that actually hold the money in the world that say, like, you know, the riches are in the niches or whatever.
Niche down till it hurts.
Yeah. So dive into that journey a little bit about like finding, or maybe it was stumbling into the niche that you guys kind of are in now. And what was that like?
I think it was very much a stumble. And so I think a good piece of advice is if you're starting out and you have an idea, just be really sensitive and mindful of the different opportunities that are presenting themselves. What happened was we were running this crowdfunding platform in Fort Collins, and then we started to have CSU students using it. And a lot of them were from like the Center for Entrepreneurship, and they were coming on the platform and they were starting projects. And all of a sudden the university was saying, you know, well, what is this thing? Why are they using it? And a university, they have a lot of fundraising needs. And I think what was happening to them at that time is, A, they were unable to support, you know, the smaller stories anyway. Like, generally, they send out beg letters for, you know, small groups that want to fundraise. and that's the only mechanism they have.
And like, could you give us an example of what you'd consider some of those small
projects? So let's just say you're a sports team and you want to raise money for new uniforms. Like, you go to the fundraising office at the university, they're going to just laugh at you because they're not set up to support that small, you know, unit of storytelling. They're going after these, you know, large capital campaigns and major givers and things. And so these students were coming on community funded and using it. And it was actually Charisse Bowen who then moved on to Galvanize and started that up. But she was the professor there that we worked really closely with to help set up a platform that was part of CSU's infrastructure, but that all the entrepreneur students could run their crowdfunding projects on. And there was a lot of benefit for the university because now they were keeping those stories. They were making sure that they were on brand and that people who thought they were giving money to CSU actually were. It just kind of was this freak occurrence.
Was that the first time you had like white labeled?
That's what platform? I was starting to think about is, we were also talking to organizations like the United Way and the Red Cross who weren't doing anything like this at the time. And they saw it and they were really intrigued by it. But these were household brands. There was no way they were going to launch projects on a third-party site. You know, they had their own identity. And that's when we kind of made the pivot and said, rather than mining for gold, we're going to sell the shovels. And we white-labeled the product. We found a way to take all of the functionality that we had running on our site and basically embed it on any website. And so before we knew it, we had a platform that was existing at CSU, and then we had one, pop up in CU Boulder. And the thing is, once you find a little niche, once you find someone who's like, we really need this,
right?
You do that once and you have results, and then you start showing it to the other similar organizations, and it opens up a whole doorway. So before we knew it, we went from being a grassroots fight the system crowdfunding platform to being a technology provider for higher education institutions to embed that in their websites.
Do you see, I guess, community funded staying in the education space, or do you guys have it like, it seems like you kind of had this like broad, like for everybody vision, and then it kind of narrowed down to like larger fundraising organizations. Do you see in the future an opportunity to kind of like make similar services more available for smaller nonprofits or different
things? That's always been the dream. And that's where we're, again, finally getting back to some of these original ideas. We have a lot more work to do in higher ed. Like, that's a huge market. We're very well positioned and we're growing there. So that will continue to be our focus. But as we've been able to, you know, release a new product that makes scalability a lot easier, we can take more opportunities. A number of us who have been around since the beginning are really excited to kind of get back to our roots, even if it's just a passion project here or there.
Right.
I mean, one of my favorite clients that we've had a good relationship with is the Local Crowd, which are two just brilliant, passionate women out of Wyoming whose mission it is to bring crowdfunding to rural communities. And they have, I think at this point, 25 different communities all across the U.S. And Community Funded is the platform that, you know, is embedded in all these little communities, basically to do what we were doing just for Fort Collins in 2012.
That's cool. One interesting question that just popped in my head is like, describe the team. I feel like we see businesses, but we often don't know, like, especially in tech.
Yeah.
Like, what kind of team does it take to run a software company, a software crowdfunding company, and kind of what does the team look like?
Yeah. So in the beginning, obviously, there was a small amount of people and we were all doing everything, wearing dozens of hats. And I'm very happy to say that we have a good infrastructure now and we have a lot of brilliant people that are in good positions. So the makeup of our organization is split, I'd say, in thirds between engineering and development and then sales and then what we call success services.
Okay.
So especially in our industry, just having the tool is not enough. You really need to know how to use the tool. And so a whole side of our business is training people on how to do this effectively. And, you know, bringing a crowdfunding platform to your community itself is an entrepreneurial activity, and it requires quite a bit of knowledge and handholding. So we have two engineers that are on our kind of current platform. And they're just, you know, installing new clients. And then we have a team of about 10 engineers that are building the new next generation platform. And then we've got three salespeople that are here in Fort Collins and another four that are spread out over the country, focused on different domains, I guess. Mm-hmm. And then we have four success managers that all have clients that they support, and they're
cool,
you know, every day on the phone and training people and helping them get ready for events and sharing best practices. And
that's cool. And has your role stayed the same?
No. I mean, my basic role has, in that I'm just going to do everything and anything that I can to make the thing go forward and to, mm-hmm. You know, solve problems where I can. And a lot of what I've always done is kind of be a middle position, like hearing a lot of different perspectives and coming to peaceful resolutions for them and just
right.
helping the whole internal organism be in harmony. As far as like a role in the company, I've really found like the perfect role for me, which is great. And obviously I had a hand in getting there, but
right.
I'm the chief creative officer, cool. which is kind of a weird title for a company. But the way I look at my role is that anything that we're putting out in the world, I'm responsible for making sure that it's high quality, that it hits the mark,
right.
and is effective. So that kind of goes across the whole company, making sure that everyone has the right resources.
Why do you love that? Like, why is that the perfect role for you? And why do you love that piece of the company?
Yeah, I mean, it gets back to what I opened with, is I think I've come full circle, at least in my own personal conception of what it means to be creative. Because in the old days, I was very probably ego-driven, like a lot of artists are, and it was all about me and what I could create. And now, 8 years in, working with different creative teams, I feel that the most creative activity I can be doing is working with others to express their ideas.
Hmm.
So one of the things that we do that I love are design sprints. So when we built our new platform, we didn't just say, what do we think people want? We actually invited in industry experts and our clients and users and you know, millennial givers and all of these different people to come in with us. And through these guided events that would take, you know, a couple days a piece, we would just stop all normal business and bring everyone together in these big conference centers. And we would design and prototype the next version of the product.
Hmm.
And so that's where I really enjoy kind of being a facilitator for other people's creativity and getting the best ideas out of a group and then going through a process of actually validating those before you put in the huge expense of building them.
Right. Yeah, that's interesting. And I think a lot of people don't do that. A lot of people just kind of, you know, we think we know exactly what our audience needs. As we're wrapping up, I'm curious to your thoughts on kind of the future. This is a very vague statement, but the future of philanthropy.
Yeah.
Because I think that we've kind of looked at philanthropy as, you know, we look at Mark Zuckerberg and we look at Bill Gates and kind of think that philanthropy is reserved for the billionaires. And I've known you guys long enough to know that you kind of think differently. So, like, where do you see philanthropy going?
Well, the root of the word philanthropy is to have care for your fellow man. It's very much I want to make the world a better place. And that is not exclusive to millionaires. That is inherent, I think, in every person, that we want to manifest ourselves in the world through helping others. And philanthropy, I think, has taken on this connotation that you have to be writing a check for $1 million to be a philanthropist. And I think that we've demonstrated that when an average person is given the opportunity to make a meaningful impact, that is really the basic unit of philanthropy. And that can be done with $5. And what we're really trying to do is modernize the experience of giving, because I don't know if you give to many charities. There's a couple that I like what they do. I like their mission.
Right.
But I consistently hate the way I'm treated as a generous person. I don't like the way they message me. I don't like the way they're calling me. The impersonality of how we are able to give to organizations is what we're trying to change. We're all now used to like a Netflix kind of world where, whether it's through algorithms or my own activity, like I'm engaging with technology that knows enough about me to give me an experience that I enjoy. And I think in the space of philanthropy, what is missing and what we're trying to build is the opportunity that I can pull out my smartphone and I can be served, you know, these meaningful opportunities to be generous and philanthropic. And I can do that very easily. And I immediately get that dopamine hit, that feel good experience by making these little nuggets of impact across my wider community. So that's really the, I think, at the foundation of Community Funded, is to take the focus off of the organization and bring it down to that story level where I'm giving to things that I fundamentally believe in and care about, and then making that experience a fulfilling one. Hmm.
That's amazing. And like, that's what you guys are building. Like, that's what you guys are getting towards, which is so cool that, you know, even if it takes 10 years that you're getting there. This podcast won't be listened to by millions. Maybe it will one day, but the audience that is listening to this is like small business owners or people that are passionate about building things. What would your advice be to a room full of business owners from just kind of from your journey with Community Funded, or even from some of your creative journeys beforehand?
Yeah, and I think journey is a good kind of setup for my answer, because if I had been looking at getting to a result for Community Funded, I don't think we ever would have evolved in all the ways that we needed. I think that if you're going to start something in the world and you believe it's a good idea, having faith in the process and really enjoying that process, and again, being just aware and mindful of these opportunities that every moment are presenting themselves, that I think is the kind of the heart of how we have navigated some of the biggest storms at Community Funded, is that we always came from this place of believing what we were doing was good, knowing that everyone that we were working with had the best interests at heart, and really letting the process unfold in the way that it needed to. There's a concept that I really like that is Wu Wei, which basically I think means not forcing. So it's kind of being patient enough to, you know, really look and wait for that advantageous moment to act. And if you're kind of at the early stages and starting out on something, giving yourself enough time and again awareness to, you know, take that next step. Another saying that I think really sums this up nicely is the concept that the path provides the next logical step.
What an episode. Thank you so much for listening to this episode of the Small Business Storytellers. I want to take a quick minute and talk about some of the things that I was personally challenged with in that conversation with Ryan, and really just talk about what can we learn as people that are running businesses or people that are creating things from Ryan's story and the story of Community Funded. The first thing is I loved the part where they talked about how they had to fire everybody. Now, I don't love firing people, but I do love that they had to learn to pace themselves and to pace their budget. And it's so easy when you have money as a business just to spend it. And I think we all need to think about how those resources are going to be sustained in the long run. Secondly, I think it's huge that their team did not feel the pressure to be like Kickstarter. They're willing to put their product in the background of their clients' brands and websites so that they could further empower them. And it's just so easy to be focused on, you know, you have to be building your brand and getting your logos out there and getting your platform out there, when they realize that by putting the brand, their product into their brands, their clients' websites, it actually enabled them to make more of an impact and to serve more people. And the last thing I really was encouraged by is just their core belief that philanthropy, it's not just for people that can, you know, spend $1 million or spend tens of thousands, that philanthropy truly will change the world and that we can all be a part of that, whether it's big or small. And I think, you know, I mean, their name is perfect, Community Funded. Things and stories and causes that are funded by the community, one gift at a time, no matter how big or small. And so I just felt, I felt like their passion for philanthropy just further solidified my passion for giving and for philanthropy. So I hope that it had the same effect on you.
And I just want to thank you for tuning in to another episode and remind you that next week we'll have another great conversation for you. And in the meantime, if you want to learn more about how to grow your business with stories, I want to invite you to sign up for our free 5-day email course on how to use your brand story to grow your business. It's a simple 2-minute-per-day email course, and you will love it. You can sign up at www.successwithstories.com/challenge. Again, that is www.successwithstories.com/challenge. Thanks so much for joining me this week, and thank you for sharing this with your friends who need to hear this story. See you next time on Small Business Storytellers.